nationwide. We bring you latest current issues, discussions and information. Nationwide on Radio Miraya.
Hello and good evening to you listening to Nationwide. My name is Sunny Martin. We are coming to live from Juba. And this evening, we are going to be focusing on the impending floods in the second quarter of this year, which is most likely to affect part of East Africa, which also includes South Sudan. And the recent release report says that South Sudan has been put on high alert over the impending flooding in the second quarter of the year. The entire East Africa region, South Sudan included, is expected to experience heavy downpours akin to those last recorded in 1998, famously known as the El Nino. Researchers said the heavy rains, which are expected to start in June this year, may lead to a serious hunger crisis with less farm output expected to come out in most of East African countries this year. And during the expected heavy rain season, transport infrastructure is expected to be disturbed, and this may in turn disrupt the smooth supply of goods to the market, leading to a sharp dive in commodities prices as a result. So, what impact will these findings have on most farmers in South Sudan? And already, some states that has been experiencing flood for the last 2 to 3 years. I'm joined in the studio here to discuss all this by my guest, Nicholas Kirendi, who is the head of Food Security and Nutrition, Food and Agriculture Organization, South Sudan. Good evening, and thank you so much for honoring our invitation.
Thank you so much for having me.
Our lines will also be open to you later on, where you can call and discuss this important topic with us right here in the studio. First, tell us more about this released report. What compelled the people to release this report, and what signal can the farmers and other people in this country expect when the time comes?
So thank you. So this report is a culmination of research and monitoring that has been going on for a long period. As you've been aware, there's been a continuous 3-year drought that has been taking place in the Horn of Africa. And this has been caused by the opposite of El Nino, which is La Nina. But now there are indications that starting from June, there's going to be El Nino that is taking place globally. So it's going to affect not only Africa, but the rest of the world, especially parts of South America. But if you come to Africa now, especially the East Africa part, we are seeing that the El Nino is likely to cause heavy rainfall, which is above normal for most of these countries that are along the coast. But also areas that are deeper in the inland are also likely to be affected by this heavier than normal rainfall. And South Sudan is part of those.
But we are not close to any coast. How comes that we are going to be affected as a country, South Sudan?
So if you understand the whole way that rainfall happens, it's because of the clouds that come from areas where it's able to form, and then it's blown inland. So South Sudan will not get the direct impacts of El Nino similar to other countries like Kenya and others that are along the coast. But if you look at the ICPAC prediction that we've had, already we are predicting above normal rainfall for South Sudan. So the impacts of El Nino for South Sudan are going to come from the very high rainfall that is going to fall in the western parts of Kenya, especially around Lake Victoria. Mm-hmm. And you remember from about, I think when the flooding in South Sudan started heavily around 2020, one of the biggest factors that contributed to the heavy flooding that we saw along the White Nile Basin was the high levels of water in Lake Victoria and Lake Albert. Mm-hmm. So the same is likely to repeat this year, because there is a lot of rainfall that is going to fall around Lake Victoria because of the El Nino effect, and that is going to find its way into South Sudan. So counties along the White Nile Basin, Juba, Terekeka,
Jongle,
Upper Nile,
Unity,
all the way to Renk, some parts of Unity, but also areas that are fed by flood waters from the Ethiopian highlands. And this is the eastern part of South Sudan. You know, the Mabans coming down to Akobo are also going to be affected, and even Pibor. So if you look at that, as much as the effects might not directly impact South Sudan in terms of the heavy rainfall because of El Nino, but the heavy rainfall in the neighboring countries that are heavily affected by Nino is going to actually find its way into South Sudan.
Should farmers and other South Sudanese be worried about this news?
Yes, they should be worried. Because as you're already aware, there are some areas in South Sudan that have not yet gotten dry from previous episodes of flooding. So there is going to be almost double flooding. The seasonal flooding that happens because of the other normal rainfall that takes place in South Sudan, including the one that comes from rivers that are from neighboring countries where it's also heavily raining. But now there is the added effect of El Nino that is going to cause excessive rainfall, more than the above normal rainfall that they normally get seasonally. So all that is actually now going to lead to new flooding in areas that were probably not flooded before, but additional flooding in areas that are already flooded and hadn't dried, for example, in Unity around Bentiu and all these areas. So the farmers around that area should be worried.
So what should be done to mitigate the risk and minimize the impact on the people along these corridors you have just mentioned? Even part of Central Equatoria should also be worried, like Telekeka, you mentioned Jonglei, that has also experienced a lot of flood that led to displacement of people with all their properties. What should be done to mitigate this?
So the first one, I think, is we need to work very closely with the government authorities like the Ministry of Humanitarian Affairs and Disaster Management to pass on early warning messages through the local authorities at the county level, so that people are aware that this is coming. And then number two, we need to work together to rehabilitate infrastructure that is going to stop water from flowing into adjacent areas, especially along the River Nile, the White Nile. Then the other thing is we need to make sure that people move to higher ground, whereby they can be able to carry on their agricultural activities, so that if people want to plant in the lowlands, they should be dissuaded and made or told that they should be able to plant in areas that are unlikely to be affected by flooding, even if they might be far away from their homesteads. But also the people who have livestock, because livestock are also affected by the flooding that comes. They need to be given messages early enough so that they can start migrating their livestock to other locations whereby they can be able to have dry ground, where they can also be able to access pasture.
And like you mentioned earlier, some states are already still feeling the aftermath of flood, like parts of Upper Nile, parts of Unity State, and still, many people also don't want to move out. And, you know, the issue of moving out is complicated here because you have to go and stay in somebody's land. So how are you working together with the government or institutions like Ministry of Humanitarian Affairs, Ministry of Agriculture, and other agencies? What are resources in order to educate these people to know that for sure there's flood coming up and it might kill some people?
So, and that is what I mentioned actually earlier on, that we need to work closely with the relevant ministries in the government. So number one is to pass the messages so that people can try and find, habitable areas within their areas of origin or where they are actually habitually residing. But also number two, if these local authorities are aware of what's coming and the risks that are associated with it, and people have to migrate, then it's easier if both, you know, from where they're coming from to where they are going, if the local authorities are able to be involved, then they can be able to ensure that there is safe passage for these people who are fleeing the flooding, but also they can be able to allocate them, you know, safe areas where they can be able to come and stay during this particular period, and then they can be able to return again to their areas later on. And for us as humanitarians, we are going to be able to support these people with anything that they need. First of all, it's this whole issue of trying to negotiate this safe passage and making sure that people are aware what is happening and why they're moving, but also make sure that they can be able to get access to livelihoods, kits that can be able to support them to continue with their cultural livelihoods. We can be able to provide them with maybe non-livelihood support by other agencies, but also be able to make sure that livestock vaccination and treatment campaigns are in high gear so that we minimize any spread of diseases from the areas that they are coming from to where they are going.
Mm-hmm. And have we shared this report or this document with the relevant authorities? What are their response? Are they ready to embark on this huge task which requires money? And you are aware South Sudan is already grappling with a lot of challenges. We have returnees who are coming. We have refugees who are coming. We have 9.4 million South Sudanese who are in need of humanitarian assistance. This is huge for the government.
Yes, indeed. So this information is already with the relevant authorities and there are discussions going on. And they are very receptive because already before even this report came out, We've already established committees at the national and subnational level to be able to address these natural disasters, and flooding is one of them. So this has already been activated, and there are going to be messages being passed, some of them even through radio. We have, the, I think, Zizira Tana, which we use to pass messages. So that's going to be part of that. But also at the humanitarian level, my representative, Mr. Meshack Malo, is going to take this message and be able to make a presentation to the HCT, which is a humanitarian country team, so that the other leaders of other agencies can be aware of what's coming, and they can start formulating an action plan on how to address the likely impacts of this flooding that is likely to be caused by El Nino.
So when the people living along the White Nile,
yes,
like you mentioned, when can they expect this flood to hit them?
So according
to the report.
Yeah, so the seasonal flooding is going to come during the normal time around June, July, when the rainy season starts. But the flooding from the El Nino, if you look at the report that was that came out, the impact is likely to hit East Africa between September 2023 and January 2024. So South Sudan is also likely to be affected by that flooding. Now, the sad part about this whole scenario is that South Sudan is likely now to get two flooding events in 1 year. So the first one is a seasonal one that will take place between May to around October.
This month?
Yeah, you know, it starts from this month because already the rains have been very heavy.
Yeah.
I think the other day you saw the Juba International Airport.
Yes, even
was
here
flooded.
Juba, yeah.
So flights, you know, flights were being redirected back. So you can actually see the impacts are there. So when the flooding, when the El Nino takes place and affects East Africa from September to January later on in the year, that means that that's going to be the post-harvest and harvest period for South Sudan. And these impacts might make farmers lose more crops in the farm if they do not adhere to the message that they need to go and farm in areas that are going to be safer for them. So if they continue farming in the traditional areas that mostly get flooded and say the season of flooding comes and goes by around September, October, then the sad news is that there's going to be another round of flooding that is likely to be caused by El Nino. So they need to be aware of this and make sure that they don't plant and they don't stay along areas that are likely to be flooded.
Okay, and what about other parts of the country that does not fall along the White Nile? Do they also expect anything to do with this El Nino, or they are more safer than others?
So they might be safer from the effects of waters that are going to leave Lake Victoria and come upstream as they try to find their way through the Nile to the Red Sea. But I think if you look at even the predictions that we have, because of that whole effect of El Nino, so the sea temperatures are much warmer now. So there are a lot of clouds that are being formed, and some of them might find their way all day to Sudan, to South Sudan.
Yeah.
So that's also likely to cause slightly more heavier rainfall than normal, and that is likely to cause maybe slightly more flooding than we've seen in the previous years, maybe similar to what we saw in 2020.
Yeah.
So they're also at risk, and they need to take the necessary measures to reduce the impact of the flooding.
And if all this happens, like you said, South Sudan is most likely to have two flooding this year from now up to October.
Into next year.
January.
Yes.
So what impact will it have on food security?
I mean, definitely, if you look at, let's say, the food production report that we released the other day, some of the lowest producing states are the ones that are affected by flooding. So if the flooding hits again, we expect to see that those counties are likely to produce even much less, so which means food insecurity is going to increase. But other than that, the infrastructure that makes it possible to move food, you know, from areas that where it's being sourced to the markets in those particular locations is also going to be affected. So if you're bringing in food through means like air transport, it means the cost of those foods is going to be very high. And whenever food is very expensive, then food insecurity follows. So what I can see is that there's a high likelihood that the food security situation is going to deteriorate even further in the counties or the states that are going to be affected by this flooding this year.
And in this case, as an expert, what is your advice to South Sudanese? What precautions can they take? You have asked farmers to go and plant in higher ground. What about the ordinary people?
So there is a concept of climate-sensitive agriculture, whereby sometimes when you're given lemons, you make lemonade. So if you are getting a lot of water in South Sudan, instead of planting the traditional sorghum, maize, and all that, why don't we switch to crops like rice, which thrive in these waters? I know FAO has been doing some work in Awil testing some rice varieties that are very, you know, that do very well in these kind of conditions. So I would say people in locations like Jongle, Unity, Upper Nile, which are mostly underwater because of the flooding, we should be able to try and teach them how to move towards climate-sensitive agriculture and make sure that they try and adopt crops that are going to survive in these flooded waters if they are unable to move to locations where they can be able to farm the traditional crops.
Okay, so we expect more displacement this year in some parts of the country due to flood?
Yes, displacement will definitely be there.
Mm-hmm.
And this is going to be displacement of people with their assets like livestock. And so all the other factors that you've been seeing that have been emerging because of this kind of displacement is likely to continue.
All right. You are listening to Nationwide. My name is Annie Martin. We are coming to live from Juba. And our discussion this evening is focusing on South Sudan has been put on high alert over the impending flooding in the second quarter of the year, which is most likely to translate up to 2024 in January 2024. And more displacement is expected to happen as a result of this El Nino, where more rain will be around Lake Victoria, and downward it is going to affect parts of South Sudan. People living along the White Nile are most likely to be affected by more flood. And you have heard from him. Our lines will be open to you shortly if you have got any concern. As you have heard, this is very, very serious. And people are told, please, if you live along the White Nile, you need to now find a way of relocating before the flood comes. 0912062079 or 0912062950, or you can send us your question to our SMS number 0912177141, and I will be reading your questions right here to my guest in the studio, who is with me here, Nicholas Kirandi, who is the head of Food Security and Nutrition, the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization in South Sudan. And we are discussing about this expected flooding that is expected to disrupt a lot of activities in South Sudan up to January 2024. Our lines will be open to you shortly, where you can call and be part of our discussion.
Broadcasting from the heart of the nation's capital, this is Radio Miraya. 101 and 101.5 FM. Radio Miraya, the voice of peace.
Nationwide, we bring you latest current issues, discussions, and information. Nationwide on Radio Miraya.
Good evening to you listening to Nationwide. My name is Sani Martin, and in the studio I have Nicholas Kirandi, head of Food Security and Nutrition, United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization in South Sudan, and we are discussing about South Sudan has been put on high alert over the impending flooding in the second quarter of the year. The entire East Africa region, South Sudan included, is expected to experience heavy downpour. That is famously known as the El Nino. And researchers have said that the heavy rains, which are expected to start in June, may lead to a serious hunger crisis, with less farm output expected to come out in most parts of East African countries. And during this heavy downpour, like you have heard, transport infrastructure is expected to be disrupted or disturbed. And this may also disrupt the smooth supply of goods to the market. And many people are expected to be displaced, more especially those living along the White Nile. Beginning from Juba here in Terekeka on to Jongle and parts of Unity State and Upper Nile State. So if you have got any question, you can call us and ask our guest right here. Before our lines are open, Nicholas, the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization is quoted in this, the report, warning that the escalation in food insecurity is a consequence of combination of conflict, economic shocks and weather extremes. Is this catastrophic scenario realistic?
Yeah, so Sunny, it's not a matter of it being realistic. We are already living in that reality. For example, if you look at the last IPC report that looks at the food security situation in South Sudan, you find that the country has one of the highest proportional populations facing crisis or worse acute food insecurity in the world. And this is between April and July, which is the peak of the lean season.
This year.
So that's about 7.8 out of 12 million South Sudanese. So it's only like...
So everybody's angry.
Just about 4 million South Sudanese are the only ones who can say that they can, you know, at least put something. And it's
on
not
the
that...
table.
You know?
On the table, yes.
On the table. And not like extremely comfortably, because they could be maybe in stressed and below. But the ones who are really struggling is 7.8 million, close to 8 million South Sudanese.
Yeah.
And the factor that are causing it is actually the conflict, economic crisis, and now weather shocks. And so with the coming flooding because of El Nino, that means that the number might even increase to a much higher number, maybe 8.5 million or 9 million, mm-hmm. depending on how big the population is that is going to be affected by this flooding, and whether they actually adhere to the messages that we are passing on to them that they need to relocate from areas where they are going to be affected. They need to make sure that their livelihoods are being undertaken in areas that cannot be impacted by the flooding that is coming.
Are this awareness ongoing at the moment in regards to these expected floods, and are people heeding to your pleas for them to move out, or are you facing resistance? And if not, the awareness is not translating to the ground, what effort do you think all stakeholders should put in place right now to make sure the message is taken to those who are really going to be affected by this flood?
So we are working closely again with the local authorities to make sure that they can keep on passing the messages. We've established community-based committees, especially related to natural resource management, that also takes place into consideration the disaster risk management aspects. And these are also being used to pass on the messages about the risks of the impending flooding. But also the other thing that we are doing is to make sure that when these messages are being passed, we use as many mediums as possible to be able to pass the messages. And that also includes the radio programming that we're able to transmit on a weekly basis to these populations. Now, you know, you cannot force somebody to leave an area, but we can be able to try and use the message that you're passing to tell them that if you remember what has happened in the last 3 years, there's a like that it's going to happen again. So if we're able to work together with these communities to be able to establish areas that they can go to and then have the government come in and facilitate their movement to those areas for a short period so that they can be able to stay there safely and then return to their homes once the flooding has been able to pass, I think then we can be able to beat the adverse effects of this flooding.
So let me relate this to the biblical teaching of during the time of Noah.
Yes.
When he was making the ark, there were people who never believed that there will come rain or floods. Do you also expect the same thing here? The people may say, these are just NGOs making noise to get funding.
No, I'm hoping that different from the Noah time, because the Noah time, the flooding just came once and almost wiped away everybody. The flooding has been here 3 times. So if somebody is told that it's coming for the 4th time or the 5th time and they're not able to listen, then I think we have a much bigger problem than just the flooding. It means now the problem is not even in the community itself.
Okay.
Unless they have a very good reason for not moving. And this is why I'm saying that we are trying to work very closely with all stakeholders, humanitarian, government, local communities, to be able to come up with a workable solution or plan that can be able to move them safely to locations where they can be able to survive well.
All right. Our lines are now open. You can call and ask my guest right here. You have heard from him. Floods are coming. Expect more flooding to happen twice this year, between now up to January 2024. And many people will be displaced. Crops will be destroyed. But like he have said, if you are a farmer who is in Upper Nile, you can improvise. Plant rice, because according to him, rice does very well even if there's too much water. So you can do that, and they're already carrying out some kind of a scheme in Awil as a trial to see how it will work. And like you have also heard from him, this flood will come with a lot of effects as already in the country, close to 8 million people are struggling to eat. So meaning things are not moving on well. Call us on 0912062079 and talk to us here this evening. Hello? Hello?
Good evening, Sir Martin.
Good evening to you. Your name?
This is Diang Deng in Wau.
Okay. Diang Deng, go ahead from Wau.
Yeah, actually, it is a very good elevation. And I think it's one question is like, what are they trying to do? Is it creating awareness? If the awareness, I think in radio like this is not enough because we have more of our population who are not listening to radio. So how do we help these people to create awareness to make sure that this disaster is coming, is no one, and people are really aware? Like he said that planning this year should be planned in a way that, you know, there will be no flooding. So now what my second question is, what type of the area you think that if such a flooding is coming cannot more affect the crops or cultivation? What type of area such that also we benefit from it?
Okay.
Even last year I was affected. I cultivated almost 25 feet down of ground, but all of them were actually flooded. So last year even I don't have appetite to cultivate.
Okay.
So what is the advice for people who are willing actually to do something this year? Thank you.
Thank you so much. Young Deng from Wau, and yes, right away, Nicholas.
Yeah, so thank you, Young Deng from Wau. So what you're trying to do, like you correctly said, is create awareness. And I totally understand that not everybody has access to radio to be able to hear.
Mm-hmm.
So what we have is another strategy whereby, like I said, we have these local community committees related to natural resource management and disaster risk reduction, whereby we pass on the messages to them and they can take them all the way to down at PIAM level. So that's one. Number two, when FAO is doing its livelihood interventions meeting with beneficiaries, either directly or through implementing partners, we also pass messages to the beneficiaries and give them messages on what is the weather likely to be, what can you be able to do to be able to take advantage of that weather or to be able to limit the effects or the impacts of any adverse weather like flooding that might happen.
Yeah.
Now, in terms of areas suitable for farming, Yang Ding, I'm sure if like you've been living in Wau for long, you could have probably known that the area you are farming, if it rains a lot, it was going to flood. So what you need to do is be able to know either through your own knowledge or local knowledge that is with the older people to tell you which are the areas that never flood. Because they've been around for long enough, they can tell you if you go to a certain area, it's a highland area or it's a much higher ground, the flooding is unlikely to affect that area. Then be able to negotiate with the community that probably owns that land so that they can be able to hive off another 25 dance for you to be able to carry out your farming. Because I can assure you that according to the weather forecast that we have, the areas around Wau in Western Bagaza are going to get very good rain for this year. So please take advantage of this and make sure that you farm in a much higher ground whereby your crops are not going to be affected by any flooding that might occur.
And there is another question here coming from Valentino Mayol, Mawen from Awil. He says, Northern Baragazar is always affected by flood, and you are aware about that. It has always been there. So the people of Northern Baragazar, sometimes they do a lot of farming. What is your, from this report, is Awil or Northern Baragazar going to be part of this area which will be flooded? And that's from Valentino in Awil.
Yeah, so the flooding in Awil is caused by two factors. One is heavy rainfall. Another one is the rivers that flowed through the state are also causing flooding in the adjacent areas. And like I already said before, in Awil, there's the Awil rice scheme, irrigation scheme, whereby we are doing these trials. If Valentino is in an area that perpetually floods and is unable to move to a location whereby he can be able to farm without the risk of flooding, then I would recommend that if he can find his way to the nearest FAO office and talk to the officers there, they can be able to try and help him switch to what we are calling climate smart agriculture, which means he now needs to move from the traditional sorghum and try to plant crops like rice. But if he's able to move to higher ground, like I already told even Yang Ding, then for sure he can continue with the traditional crops that he normally farms, like sorghum.
Okay. You can still call us and ask your question right here. Hello, Redimire. Good evening.
Good evening.
Your name?
Okay. All right.
Thank you so much, Manut George from WOW, and I will be translating that shortly to my guest here. We have another question here also coming via our SMS number, and this is coming from James in Bortown of Jonglei State. He says, Nicholas, your explanation is well understood, but he says, what kind of support will the UN agencies and other partners render to local people who might be willing to build dikes like what they have been doing all the time to protect the flood, the water from going beyond its banks? That's from James in Bortown of Jonglei State. And Manut from WOW is asking something we have been reporting, that once flood happens, like last year, we reported a lot of snake bites in Unity State. And the state minister in Unity State was calling for this anti-venom to support these people who are being bitten by snakes. And this sometimes also happens once flood happens. Maybe you can see crocodile comes out and begin eating people and causing a lot of damage to these people. Are you going to work together with other partners, like you mentioned, other ministries, to come and join your team together, including resources, to do this kind of preparedness as we wait for the flood to come?
Yeah, thanks, Manut and James. Manut from WOW, James from Board. So maybe I'll start with Manut.
Yes.
So when it comes to flood response, we make sure that it's multi-partner, multi-stakeholder, including government. Something that is happening that will come out later on is that right now South Sudan is coming up with a food security crisis preparedness plan. And the food security crisis preparedness plan, which is a with the Minister of Agriculture and Food Security, the World Bank, and other partners, is supposed to come up with strategies to address shocks that might affect the country and impact on food security.
Yeah.
Flooding is one of them. This platform is supposed to bring all people of different levels of authority so that they can be able to make decisions and be able to avail resources to be able to address some of these crises that occur. Now, I'm hoping that by the time this happens, this crisis preparedness plan will be in operation and we'll be able to have mechanisms to be able to...
And respond to all these challenges.
And respond to this. But also, most importantly, things like snake bites. These are things that touch on the medical part.
Yeah.
And I can assure you that WHO is one of the people that sit in the HCT.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll be able to be told that when the flooding occurs, these are some of the risk factors that we need to look at. Can we provide some of this antivenom to the most affected areas like Unity? And they can be able to be able to address that. Things like crocodiles. We will probably have people from wildlife
mm-hmm.
who can also be able to see what can they be able to do. Although it's very difficult to control crocodiles when
yeah.
when floodwaters are there.
Yes.
But we can be able to see what they can do. Also, I know FAO provides things like canoes and motorized boats to be able to move people around and things like that. And not just even FAO alone, even the other agencies do provide that.
Yeah.
So if communities are able to come together and have committees whereby they can be able to access these resources on behalf of the community, I think they can be able to come in handy and support them during this time.
Okay.
For Bor?
Yes, James.
Who is asking? James from Bor. He's asking what support UN will render to local people willing to build dikes to stop water from coming and affecting them.
Yeah.
So if James looks, sometimes the humanitarian community comes up with schemes like cash for assets, cash for work, which is supposed to help communities not only build infrastructure to protect the communities from things like flooding, but also be able to get some income to be able to cater for their, you know, for to buy food and other things as they're able to do this work. So since we're already going to raise the alarm on this particular event that is likely to occur towards, you know, starting from maybe the next 2-3 months into early next year. We are going, I'm sure, going to see humanitarian communities stepping up their investment in these kind of schemes so that we can actually be able to help these communities build much more stronger dikes so that they can stop the water from coming and affecting them.
Yes, and there is another question here coming from, no name, but it is a good question. He says, always everything that comes has either a negative side or a positive side. When the flood comes, there will be a lot of fish. Is a FAO expected to support these fishermen with fishing kits like the nets and others so that they can also use this chance to do fishing and also support their family members when the flood comes?
Thank you. In fact, he's taken some of my points out of my mouth. So I was going to come to this point that, like I said before, when you serve lemons, sometimes they make lemonade.
Yeah.
It might not be as good as orange juice, but yeah, lemonade is still something that you can take. So FAO recognizes that there are bad sides towards flooding, but there are also good sides. So the good side is that areas get water and fish comes. And some people say that you'll even find fish swimming in your bedroom.
Yeah.
You step out and a fish hits your foot, you know. That means that these opportunities you can take advantage of. And FAO is going to be distributing fishing kits that enables people to create nets, the fishing hooks and all that. But most importantly is we've realized that there's a lot of post-harvest losses when it comes to fishing in South Sudan.
Mm-hmm.
Not only are we going to provide the fishing kits, but we'll be able to train people on how to preserve the fish once they catch it. How do you gut it? How do you open it and then dry it using solar dryers and all that so that then you can actually be able to keep it and either use it later on, but also you can be able to sell it in other locations that are not flooded but need fish, and you can be able to make some income to support your family who has been affected by this flooding.
Right. 0912062079 is the number for you to call. Hello, Redimira. Hello.
Martin.
Yes, your name?
This is Samuel from Meridi.
Samuel from Meridi. Go ahead, Samuel.
First of all, I want to thank the guest in the studio and appreciate him for the lament he made on the alert that South Sudan is going to experience now. Now, my question is this. By now, what we are discussing now is only heard in the media. Of course, you talk about the awareness to be carried. How sure is he that the awareness will reach to the grassroots? That is 1-2. What is the plan forward now? Because I'm sure they are expecting now when it starts, then the plan will start. What are they trying to do now in order that everybody in the community understand that this thing is going to happen really? Then the evacuation has to start immediately before it comes. What are they really planning to do now so that people will start moving away early like this? Thank you so much.
Okay. Good evening.
Sani Martin.
Yes, your name?
Ustaz Levy from Meridi.
Okay. Ustaz Levy, go ahead from Meridi.
Only a brief question.
Mm-hmm.
For us, the farmers, we don't know if this rain starts, for how long will it last?
Okay.
I mean, man, so that we can adjust ourselves accordingly.
Okay. Yes, that is Stas Levy from Meridi. Yes, let's hand over the microphone to Nicholas. When should people begin moving from these expected places which are supposed to be, which is going to be affected by flood?
So there are a couple of things that you can do when you're told that flooding is coming and you're told early enough. So number one, and which is always the easiest, is to try and create infrastructure to stop the floodwaters from coming and affecting homesteads and farms. And we hope that we can actually be able to invest and get enough community participation to be able to do that. And also we can be able to get some heavy equipment to be able to put, to pile together soil to be able to act as dikes to stop the water from coming.
Mm-hmm.
But then there are areas where people are staying, which even if you create dikes, somehow the water will always find their way into those areas. People who stay in those areas, and particularly the lowlands, should start moving as soon as they see the rains have started coming and they start having even small flash episodes of flooding.
Yeah.
They should start moving, because once the heavy rains really come, the flooding is not going to go down. It's actually going to increase, and that is why sometimes when you're going to some of these locations in the field, when you're flying over, you actually see houses submerged all the way to the roof.
Yeah.
That is because the people refuse to move and still keep, you know, building their houses in those locations. So the movement of people from flood-prone areas to areas where they can be safer should start as soon as the rainy season starts. So it varies from location to location, but as soon as it starts and you see your areas are starting to flood, it's time to start moving. And then for Levi from Maridi.
Yeah.
Firstly, he's lucky that he's in Maridi where it doesn't flood too much.
Should they be worried, those of Maridi and Western Equatoria? Because what we know last year
there were episodes,
yeah.
But they are not as bad as the people for Jungle and all that.
Yeah.
For them, it's like it comes, and then luckily the soil is good; it's able to dissipate, and they can continue whatever. Yeah. But they should be worried, and some of the some of the simple things they can do is like create trenches for water in their farms, so that when the water comes, the higher areas in the farms can keep the crops, and then the water passes in those trenches and goes into the nearest lowlands or maybe into the nearest rivers.
Mm-hmm.
So these are some of the agricultural practices that you can do to be able to limit the impacts of this rainfall on your crops. But then in terms of how long the water is going to last, again, it's going to run through the seasonal period for Maridi for getting the rains. And then also there might be that risk, although not very much for Maridi, for the September to January,
mm-hmm.
Although that's going to affect mostly the Great Upper Nile.
Yeah.
But for Maridi, in case the rains continue, dropping very heavily and the El Nino, event becomes much more severe, there might still be episodes of flooding. But for them, I wouldn't say that they would be affected as much as the people mm-hmm. in the Great Upper Nile.
Okay. 0912062079 and... we can pick one more call as we conclude our discussion for today. And let's take this one here. This is coming from Loro Koyi from Pibor. And it says, please, you want to find out, we in Greater Pibor administrative area are always affected by flood. Should we also be worried and begin preparing? And what are your expectations and advice to the people of Greater Pibor?
Yeah, like we said, Pibor is it has multiple risk factors or multiple areas of bringing flooding. There is the one that comes from Ethiopia.
Yeah.
There is the one that is from the rainfall itself. And now there is the added flooding from the El Nino effect. But then FAO did some very interesting work on Pibor in terms of flood susceptibility. And the most interesting thing is that the area where Pibor town is also the most susceptible to flooding
mm-hmm.
because it's more of a lowland.
Yeah.
So that means if you really want to do farming and the security situation allows, do your farming slightly out of town where, from historical knowledge, you know that it doesn't flood heavily as opposed to doing it very near the town, which is very prone to flooding. So those are some of the messages that we can pass to the people to be able to mitigate the effects of the upcoming flooding in Pibor.
And as we conclude, I don't know whether I should say your recommendation or your message as the flood is expected from September up to January next year. What is your real advice to people who are along the White Nile and more especially in the Greater Upper Nile region as we conclude?
So three things. Number one, listen to the early warning messages and take up the advice that you've been given to minimize the impacts of the flooding on you. Yeah? Number two, you should be able to do your farming in areas that are higher ground. Avoid planting in areas that you know will flood, hoping that it's not going to flood because it's likely going to flood. Then number three, minimize food losses by making sure that any knowledge that is being passed on to you on how to minimize those post-harvest losses, how to increase preservation of your, or how to improve the effectiveness of the preservation methods that you're using, please take that message into consideration, heed it, and make sure that you are able to actually use that technology to be able to minimize the losses of your crops.
Nicholas, thank you so much, and we hope to talk to you some other time as we wait for this flood. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you.